This is a Collider.com audio interview.
Can you say your names for our tape recording?
Joel Cohen.
Ethan Cohen.
Try to attribute you, right?
No, I don't worry about it over much.
Do you ever find yourself misquoted? Like, you know that he said something? That
yes, no, it happens all the time. It doesn't bother us. Huh.
So why you pick this book?
We didn't actually pick it. It was sent to us by Scott Rudin, who had acquired the rights to it about a year. And he sent it to us in galleys about a year before it came out. And asked us if we were interested in doing it. And we read it in both. Really, you know, we'd read other Cormac McCarthy books just for pleasure and liked him a lot. But this one we thought could make a really interesting movie.
All of your films are very different from each other, but most of them at least have some sort of quirkiness that lets people know this is a Coen Brothers film. Did you strive to eliminate any of that from this and just make it a reality-based movie?
We just, not consciously, we just tried to make the, you know, do an adaptation of the book. It was, it was just it's sort of straightforward problem from our point of view, which is how do you turn that into a movie? So,
are there films of yours that you feel are more similar to each other than others?
Oh boy, we don't really compare them. There's just nothing in it for us. You know what I mean? There's some pleasure in doing a movie and thinking, you know, how you're problem solving on a specific movie, getting a movie made. But once they're done, we don't look at them again, much less relate one to another.
So do you appreciate the process of making them more than actually watching the finished product? Or?
Yeah, it's kind of paradoxical. We're never going to enjoy watching the movie. But, you know, the whole process is... Yeah, I don't know why we do it. Yes. Sometimes the process is pleasurable. It's just kind of... Yes. On good days, it's fun. I guess that's why we do it.
I'm at the point now where I have a hard time keeping them straight. So, honestly, chronologically,
There's an interview with Brando where somebody asked him something about Apocalypse Now, and he said, "Is that when I was bald in?"
you guys just finished shooting in New York, and was that kind of a different experience for you? Or
it was,
yeah,
actually.
We lived there, and we'd never shot at home, you know, and gone home at night to bed. Yeah, mm-hmm. So it was strange by virtue of that. Yeah.
Are there any other challenges of working in the city?
There are some. I mean, it was. Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit different from working in New York, especially given the fact that it's kind of hard to sort of figure out what was what. But especially given the fact that we were working with some pretty big movie stars, so you're in. Mm-hmm. A big urban environment with very high-profile people. We'd worked with high-profile people before, but not in a big urban environment like that so much. That was a little bit different. Sort of logistically, shooting in the city is a little bit different. And then, as Ethan was saying, the idea of usually, you know, in the past when we've made a movie, you sort of go away from home, and you're able to a certain extent to sort of divorce your working life from your home life for a discrete period of time. It's a little bit different in terms of maintaining focus, a little bit easier in a way. It was an interesting experience.
And in contrast to this, which was, you know, your a lot of your locations are very remote.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Very, very different. Yes. It was really sort of the opposite side of the coin. It was, yeah.
Speaking of location, I'm the token journalist from New Mexico, so I'm kind of curious what went into the decision for filming in the state and how was the experience for...
Oh, the rebate.
The economic incentive. I mean, you know, as you know, the story takes place in West Texas, and we shot for 2 weeks around Marfa, based in Marfa in West Texas, for the stuff where you really see landscape, because New Mexico offers spectacular scenery, but not of that kind. It is a very different landscape. So we shot, as everybody is now in New Mexico, really for economic reasons, and because it does offer things while it's not West Texas. There were things we could shoot there that we couldn't have shot in Flemington, New Jersey.
Right.
Right.
Can you tell us about the extras, casting those? Were they locals or?
The extras or the bit play, the day players.
Yeah.
The day players came a combination from New Mexico and Texas, most of them. There were a few, actually, that came from Los Angeles and New York. But most of them were local people from New Mexico and Texas. Texas actually has quite a deep acting pool, the state as a whole. I would say more than New Mexico. Considerably more. So quite a few people came from there.
Could you talk about the casting of this leading characters, Josh and Javier? Josh just told us he didn't make the first audition.
But he's a notorious liar. What did he tell you?
Josh, he told us a lot of things.
Josh and why Javier are right to do this?
Why were they right to do this? Well, that's a good question. Javier was cast much before Josh was. Tommy and Javier were cast fairly early on. Tommy first. I mean, I think everyone can, you know, he was sort of on a short list of the sort of few people who could really do this part, both from an age point of view and just, you know, he's one of the sort of great American actors of a certain age who can convincingly sort of be from that area. In fact, he is from that area.
Tommy would love to hear that. We asked him to do it because he's so fucking old.
Yeah. In fact, he got up my ass about it one day. Rehearsal.
Tommy is the title part.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm only 59 years old. Javier thing is a little more complicated. He's, you know, look, if you have a chance to cast Javier Bardem in a movie, even if it's a stretch, which I don't think it was in this movie, you should do it. You know, he's fantastic.
Did you have a lot of
what did Michael what was it you know, the guy from the Billy Friedkin movie. Oh, he's a fucking genius.
Michael Shannon. Yeah.
Michael Shannon. Josh is... The problem is that once we'd cast Javier and Tommy in those two parts, you know, it's a movie about three men, each of whom is sort of has equal sort of weight in the movie. And so you've got a problem. You've got to find somebody who can sort of, you know, coexist in the movie, can be an equal in the movie with those two guys. And, you know, we saw everybody, and we're not happy with anyone until we met Josh. He came in and he read for the part, and that was that.
Josh said that when he was acting and Javier was acting, you guys didn't really offer any comments after their performances, but after Woody was on set, you'd be very enthusiastic.
Yeah, that's because Woody did what we told him to do.
Did you have an idea of what you wanted Javier to look like? Because his haircut really kind of makes his, I don't know, it's so weird. I mean, did you know you wanted him to look that way, or did he kind of come up with that look himself? Or
no, he didn't, but he embraced it completely when it was suggested.
The look, actually, the wardrobe and the haircut, the kind of feeling of the wardrobe and the haircut came from... Yeah, the art department does a lot of research, mainly photo research, because it's a period thing, although recent period is, you know, 1980, Texas, border town, border area. So they don't, you know, just kind of make it up from scratch. They look at archived pictures of the time and place. And there was, the wardrobe department actually had found this picture of a guy at a bar in West Texas bar in 1979, and it was that, you know, alarming haircut and actually that kind of wardrobe as well. And we looked at it and thought, well, that's, you know, it looks like a sociopath. And Javier really enjoyed it as well. So,
do you guys see this as an action movie?
In a way, you know, it does. You know, It's not, you know, live free or die hard or whatever, but it's...
But did, I mean, did you... Okay. was it a... Did you see it as a conscious sort of tonal shift towards the end when it gets more dialogue heavy?
Yes. Well, clearly there was a... I mean, this is true of the novel, and was one of the things that was interesting to us about the novel as well, was that it does undergo a shift three-quarters of the way through. That's part of why we... The reason for that and what that sort of engenders or what that means and how that works as a story and all the rest of it was part of what was so interesting to us about the novel.
Josh told us how he came up with the mm-hmm as a way to sort of convey things during the scenes with that dialogue. Were there other sort of tricks that were peppered along the way with other people?
Well, that's funny because I remember discussing that. When he's finding the money, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Were there other things like that? Mm-hmm. Is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
Can't think of anything. You mean like in place of dialogue?
Yeah.
Not really.
Were you aware of how in pain he was from his...
Yes. We were aware that...
Was he making it apparent?
No, he wasn't making it apparent. He had a motorcycle accident about a week or two before we started shooting, and then lied to us brazenly about the implications of the accident, so we felt completely at liberty to ignore the fact that he was in pain.
Could you talk about working with Roger Deakin and the way you guys collaborate prior to the shoot?
Prior to this one? God, I can't remember. Did we do... Yeah, we did storyboards with Roger.
Yeah.
We always... I mean, it varies. We actually... Roger didn't do this when we just finished shooting, but he... did this movie and seven or eight previous to that. We except when his schedule doesn't allow it, we actually do a draft of the storyboards for the movie ourselves, and then a draft in effect with him, a kind of redraft with him and the storyboard artist, and we did that on this movie. And we have a kind of general discussion about how the movie's going to look, and then we all kind of forget about it when we're actually shooting the movie, forget about everything we've decided and just kind of take it day by day, scene by scene. That's probably kind of the norm for how most people work on movies.
What's the new film about?
The new film is about the culture of this Central Intelligence Agency and the culture of physical fitness in Washington, D.C., and what happens when those two worlds collide. And it's also about internet dating.
So
it's funnier than the Country for Old Men?
I don't know. I guess it depends on how funny you find No Country for Old Men. Or you find this movie. It's more of a... It's kind of a...
Somebody might say it's a comedy, whereas nobody would say that about this.
Right.
Have you already started?
We just finished shooting it, yeah.
I was going to ask, I know that you just finished shooting the other day, but are you already thinking, about another project, a few months later?
We are doing another project in April, yeah, in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm. Does it have a title?
It's called A Serious Man.
Could you tell us a little bit about it?
It's a movie about a Jewish community in the Midwest in 1967. A family, basically.
Did you kind of dream that you guys going to work together kind of many years? What's the benefit to working with brothers? And what is opposite of benefit working together, the brothers?
I haven't detected any benefit yet.
Um,
did. I don't think it was an intentional.
We didn't do it on purpose.
We didn't really. It's just sort of, you know. It's just, you know, that shit happens, you know. That's how, and then you look back and you go, oh. That's how it worked out.
Can you talk about working with Clooney for the third time and Pitt for the first time?
Well, George is, you know, he loves to play idiots for us. This is, although, what did he say?
The day we wrapped, just a few days ago, we called rap on the last day. George's was the last shot, and he said, "All right, that's it. I played my last idiot." So we told him it was sad that he wouldn't be working with us.
we always have a really good time with him, and we had a great time with Brad too. It was very interesting. They're both very, very funny in the movie, I think.
Is Brad also an idiot?
I think that's pretty safe to say, yeah. It's a dueling idiots movie.
Has there been a resolution in terms of, because this picture very well may pick up a few nominations, has it been resolved as far as the co-directing thing, or do you guys still have to go by director and producer?
No, we've taken co-directing credit on the last, like, three movies. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So and the Academy and the DGA are...
I don't think that was ever an issue with them. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, the DGA is a different question, but yeah. We weren't in the DGA for many years. But we have been now. Oh, yeah, we are now. Mm-hmm.
Do you pay attention to reviews and media reaction to the film? And this film has been getting very positive reviews. Does that make it more satisfying in some ways, or...?
It depends on the movie. It makes it easier to a degree that varies from movie to movie. I mean, you know, a little movie needs good reviews more than, well, we don't do many big movies. Yes, so, yeah.
It helps. Big stars in movies are, it's all about business, you know. It's all about... Yeah, I mean, you're certainly concerned about them because they can affect the business of the movie, and the business of the movie is part of what determines what your options are in the future. So,
would you appreciate, for example, The Big Lebowski? Its stature has really grown in, like, you know, the 8, 9, 10 years since it came out. Do you guys appreciate that it's more appreciated as a movie now than it was then initially?
I'm not sure that its stature has grown so much as its popularity amongst a certain group of people. But that's been interesting, to say the least. Yeah, it's bizarre.
Could you talk a little bit about, do you guys do the test screening process, or do you go to your friends for notes on movies, or how does it work with you guys?
Yeah, that, more of that. You go to your friends for... Because there are certain things you want to know when you're cutting a movie, or when you think you've finished cutting a movie, when you hope you've finished cutting a movie. You want to make sure that certain things just kind of work in terms of clarity more than anything else, because those are the really specific questions that, you know, educated, sympathetic friends can give you an answer to that you'll trust, you know. Does X work, or is X or Y clear, you know? So that's kind of useful for us.
So who are they? Are they other filmmakers or other?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
So does the studio make you do test screenings, or do they...
They do test screenings, the studio, frequently for their own marketing purposes, but not for a... on our movies, anyway, for essentially cutting or content purposes.
Have they asked you ever to cut, like, have you offered to cut your own trailers, or do they do all that themselves and you sort of just say whatever?
That's all.
No.
Yeah.
Actually, there was one, at least one, maybe a couple, Intolerable Cruelty, they did do a recruited audience screening or two, and they did talk, you know, we did talk about, like, changes. It wasn't, like, coercive. We've always, like, had the right to final cut, but, you know, they're paying for the movie. And that kind of movie, I mean, a kind of flat-out comedy, it was actually kind of interesting. We actually did a couple of things and actually did some minimal additional shooting. It was interesting. I don't know that it helped any. It didn't hurt any either. It was interesting.
This is the last question.
Behind the story of the how did you guys shoot a kind of air gun? It's like looks like a sub.
What's the
in it? The bubble.
Yeah, that's from the novel, the cattle gun.
The air gun. Yeah.
And we there was a considerable amount of research done on those particular machines, whatever you call them. And then we built one that was sort of modified just to work with the camera, essentially.
So you guys are using kind of real?
Yeah, it was made by the special effects department based on real cattle guns, essentially.
Did you guys let Javier use it?
Oh, he was using it, but it was not... You wouldn't describe it as lethal.
Thanks, everybody. Thank you.
Thanks.
I just wanted to also know about like the DVDs, and do you guys, how involved with you are you in the DVD process?
You mean the extra stuff?
All that kind of stuff. Do you know, how involved are you in the creation of them as filmmakers?
Usually not at all. I've done a couple of things with this character. We've done a couple of things with this character, Mortimer Young, who's presumably the head of a film restoration company. And a couple of movies on Big Lebowski and actually on Blood Simple.
Do you want me to sign this one?
Yeah.
Anywhere on here?
Yeah.
Were you reluctant to call the next one a comedy or just messing around?
Oh, no, I don't know. Is it a comedy? I'm not reluctant. I just don't know if it's accurate or not.
Do you guys even make that distinction when you're making films?
Not really. That's why I hesitate. Yeah.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, guys. All right, see you guys.